It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
What? What'd he say? Jimmy Fallon. You know Jimmy Fallon. He dyes his hair. This time he dyed it darker than the last time. Things I notice. Can you turn up the audio on this computer? Okay, so I'm going to start it again because I want it to be, like, tight. I'm going to do it like we're ready. Are you ready? I'll wait. No problem, because I have 3 big hours of overnight radio, which means we can do whatever we want. It's progressive rock radio like it was in the 60s when you were doing drugs. Walter M. Sterling, did you see that Jimmy Fallon, that Fox guy, he dyes his hair. He's dyed it a much darker color this time.
On a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free, as he plays his kazoo, my love,
Sterling, every damn night, for me and you.
Is it possible that Walter Sterling is actually on the Red Apple Audio Network, including the giant affiliate WABC. Ancient astronaut theorists can't stop laughing. Is it possible that Walter Sterling is actually on the Red Apple Audio Network?
I don't know why he
network,
does it 3 times just to insult me.
Giant affiliate WABC.
Listen, he's insulting
ancient
me.
Astronaut theorists say they can't stop laughing.
Unbelievable.
Is it possible that
the
Walter
most expensive
Sterling
voice on
is
TV
actually on the
me.
Red Apple Audio Network, including the giant affiliate WABC.
Robert Clotworthy, our friend, our good friend, Walter M. Sterling, Another Side of Midnight. Begging the question, how many sides of midnight are there or do there need to be? This is nothing you should waste any time on. I waste no time on it. I had one of those experiences today that I knew could happen and that could happen to you. And it's probably one of those things that does happen to you from time to time. You anticipate there's going to be trouble and yet you walk into it anyway. I was very flattered that Margot and John Katsimatidis, and I put those names in that order because I now realize who is the power in that couple. And Margot and John Katsimatidis invited me, along with Chad Lopez, to a big event in New York City, an event that I've coveted for many years, wanted to go see. And the Inner Circle theatrical production, where for over 100 years, the media journalists in New York City get together, they make a play, a skit, raise money, making fun of the mayor of New York. They do it every year, making fun of the mayor of New York, good-naturedly. It's like they don't put up any barriers between them and the mayor. They embrace the mayor in sort of a jokey way. Whether the mayor embraces it back, no. But this is the one thing about this mom daddy, that is how you pronounce it, isn't it? Mom Danny. It is Mom Danny. Yay! Is that he does seem to be self-effacing. He does seem to have a sense of humor, not about my money, but he does seem to have a sense of humor. And everything was going fine until I questioned Chad Lopez about the single most important thing about this event. Now, just imagine your boss, your boss's wife, your owner's wife, many powerful people, the elite of New York City media. There I am in the middle of the elite of New York City media, which is silly, just so incredibly silly. And I know it was silly because 99.9% of the people at that dinner I did not know, had no idea who they were. More importantly, they had no idea who I was. But the people on stage were all television anchors, television reporters, all news radio reporters, all those people. serious news people, not journalists. Not one of them there was a journalist, but they were all serious news people. And that all went well, and I know how to eat dinner, and I know how to be vaguely pleasant most of the time. And that's really all that was required of me, was to be eating dinner and be vaguely pleasant. But again, I got to emphasize, I asked Chad Lopez, the president of the company, I asked Chad Lopez the most important question, the single most important question at about an event that he invited me to. And first, I have to tell you what the invitation was like to the Inner Circle Award dinner in New York City. I got a two-line text. Do you want to come to the Inner Circle? That was the invitation. It's beautiful. It was engraved. It was perfumed. Got it in the mail by messenger. A messenger brought it to my home. It said, do you want to come to the Inner Circle? That was it. All right. I answered yes immediately because you know the law of attraction, don't you? The law of attraction, where most people screw up, is they manifest something they want to do. They manifest an idea in their head and then it appears and they don't accept it. That's the goof. You get what you dreamed of. There it appears on your front lawn. There's the Chevy Camaro on your front lawn, red from high school. And you don't say, yes, I want that. Or you take too long. Therefore, when Chad Lopez said, president of the company, said, do you want to go to this this Inner Circle dinner? I immediately texted back, yes. And then I went to sleep. That was exhausting. That was the most I had to do that day. And then the next day, the question had to be asked. The dreaded question. You ready? Do I need a tuxedo? Is it black tie? And Chad quickly answers, yes, it's black tie, and sends me the actual graphic, the actual invitation that says black tie. And it was weird because the invitation showed photos of all the people who had attended it last year, and not one of them was wearing black tie. Not one of them. This confused me. It did not confuse my wife, however. She said, you need a black tie. Now, there were points in my life where I had to have a black tie on a fairly regular basis, and I owned one. And the law about owning a tuxedo, the law about owning a tuxedo, Tony, is that you buy it today, and then the next time you need it, it'll be too small. That is the law. You, at some point in your life, you figure you're cool, like 28, 29. In your case, that was 400 or 500 years ago, my dear listener. And you bought the tuxedo. And you're like, yeah, I'm getting invited to good stuff. And, you know, Susie's wedding's coming up and Frank's wedding's coming up. And there's a bar mitzvah. We la, la, la. Okay. So you buy a tuxedo and they're surprisingly inexpensive. I thought they'd be much more than a suit, but they're much less than a suit. I mean, you can go insane, but I know you, so you're not going to go insane. And no, Woolworths doesn't sell tuxedos. So you're going to have to stretch a little bit. You buy it and you put it in your closet for 6 weeks. You know, okay, now it's time. And it's too small. It will be too small forever. Nothing magical is going to happen. You're never going to lose that weight. You're not, forget it. Turn it into Goodwill or put it on Walmart Marketplace right away because you're never going to fit into it. I rented the tuxedo. Now, young lady, if you don't know it, I'm going to tell you something about men that I know you think you know all the important stuff, but there's one other thing you don't know. All men hate to be fitted for clothes. We hate to be fitted for clothes. We don't want to buy a dress pair of pants. We don't want to buy a dress suit. We don't want to do anything that requires the need to have a man with a tape measure and a piece of chalk and a lot of pins. We don't want anything involved with a fitting. It's a horrible experience for us. I go into a store where I can rent a tuxedo. And there in the store are two people, both women. The last thing you want to do besides not being fitted for anything is have a woman fit you who you don't know. And so there were two women in this store. Obviously, I didn't know. And one of them comes up to me and she starts to say, I say, I need a tuxedo. Okay. Da, da, da. And then she starts to do the fitting. She starts to do the measuring. And it was clear she had not done it before. She knew it needed to be done, but she hadn't done it. And the form she had to fill out, that was a stumper for her. This goes on for a while. She's in training. She's in training. And finally, a man comes in and he starts to help her training. And I stop him and I say, listen, I'm in a hurry. I had to come up with a script in my head. I'm in a hurry. Could you do it? Well, she was relieved. Thank goodness she wasn't insulted. She was relieved that she didn't have to go on with this. So, okay, fine. As I get fitted, I realize that there is always the same problem. I always have the same problem with tuxedos. No matter what the event, no matter where I got them, I always have the identical problem. And now remember, this is a dinner of every New York media clown and my boss and his wife and really serious people like Jake Novak, who will be with us in a few hours. Jake Novak's a real newsman. His father's a really serious intellectual. So the place is filled with judges and anchormen. And I can't keep my pants up. I can't keep my pants up. When I'm at this dinner, I have to keep my pants up by holding both sides. I could not get the adjustment right. I never can get the adjustment right. Bonus track, I'm left-handed. You could tell me forever how to do it. I'm left-handed. My brain will not translate that correctly. Now I'm at this fancy dinner, and I'm talking to my boss's wife, and I can't keep my pants up. And I could never take my hand off of it. And that's always the challenge. Whenever I get a tuxedo, I hate it. And it was a really nice dinner. I liked it, but I couldn't stop. And the cummerbund, I have no idea where that went. I'm wearing the cummerbund. I'm looking down. I know it's on there somewhere in the folds of that fabric. And don't be a jerk. It's not the folds of my stomach. I'm not that big. But in the folds of my jacket and my pants, I've lost the cummerbund. Lost cummerbund, escaping fastens. I can't keep it up. And that was my challenge tonight. I hate those things. We all have moments in life that are far bigger deals than, the income tax check, kid getting a D in class. These are the actual hell moments. When you and I have to get fitted for clothes and we have to go to events where the clothes have to stay together and the pants has to stay up. And I couldn't keep the pants up tonight. I just couldn't do it. My name is Walter Sterling, and my phone number is 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Obviously, the hot topic tonight is moments that are embarrassing. Things that, events, time, people, situations that are secretly embarrassing and difficult for you that you don't read about in magazines, you don't see it in the serious newspapers, you don't hear it on real all news stations. This is our news. I can't keep up my rented tuxedo pants. That is my news. I bet you have news, too. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, Walter M. Sterling. Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling.
America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Not sure how to tackle your taxes? Are you sweating the small print? You may be experiencing FOMO, the fear of messing up. The answer? Using TurboTax on Intuit Credit Karma. They help you get your biggest refund, and then we help you do more with it with a personalized plan designed to help you hit your money goals. It's time to take your taxes to the max. Start filing today in the Credit Karma app.
Ooh. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, starring Vic Ferrari.
Detective Vic Ferrari.
On Another Side of Midnight.
Detective Vic Ferrari.
Detective Vic Ferrari.
On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, it was the early 90s, and I was driving the sergeant. And we got a call of a robbery of a middle school, and we got a description of the kids, and Sergeant and I drove around the neighborhood canvassing, and finally we spotted them and grabbed them, and it turned out they had the other kids' possessions, and it was a strong-arm robbery, but it was a kiddie robbery, but a robbery nonetheless. So we brought him into the precinct, reached out to the parents, and the ringleader of this group, who really didn't seem to have a care in the world. His mother came into the station house. She was an older woman, and I was kind of surprised that she had a 13-year-old boy. She looked like she was in her 60s, and with her was a 12-year-old that she had brought in. And she's like, I have cancer. I can't handle these two. And I says, well, you know, he's already got a robbery. He's got to go to juvenile court. And she pointed to the younger one, and she said, he's worse. And that kind of, I was kind of taken back that a parent would say that about their kid. And I never thought nothing of it. And I released them to the parents, and they had to go through the court system, and I never gave it a second thought. So probably about 8-9 years later, I'm working up in that precinct. I have an arrest, and that precinct didn't get a lot of homicides, but I remember that there were detectives in the detective bureau working on a homicide. And I saw the name on the folder of the victim. And I said, oh, wow, I had locked up that kid about 7-8 years ago for a robbery. What happened? He says, looks like a drug deal gone bad. Looks like someone killed him. He says, but what we're worried about is his younger brother has sought revenge. So I didn't think again. I didn't think anything of it. Left the precinct. And later on, what I learned is the older brother that I had arrested, who was killed in the drug deal, his younger brother went, hunted down the guy that killed his brother, and wind up blowing his brains out. And detectives were looking for him. Sure enough, they caught the younger brother, and he wound up getting 25 years to life for premeditated murder, because not only did he kill the guy, but he was basically telling anybody that would listen he was going to do it. And soon as I heard that, the first thing that my mind took me back to was the single mother that really couldn't handle these two boys. And it's unfortunate that she probably had passed before the older son was killed. And then the younger son now is going to spend the rest of his life in jail. So it's just a tragic chain of events. I'm retired NYPD detective turn author Vic Ferrari with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Network.
Look at you. It's 2:20 in the morning. Congratulations. 20 minutes past the hour. 20 minutes past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. Now, why do I give the time? You're not in a big hurry to go anywhere. It's a Saturday night. Because I need to prove to you that this is live. The chemistry of American radio is so bizarre that nothing you're listening to is live except me. Let me repeat that. Nothing you're listening to is live except me. And if there's breaking news, serious news, grown-up news, here, buddy, Larry. Larry, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Walter. How are you? Can you hear me?
I'm embarrassed that I rented a tuxedo for $250 and the pants wouldn't stay up. And then I realized that my life is, in fact, not a series of successes, but a series of embarrassments. And how I negotiate those in a spiritual way, rarely, is life.
Okay. I have an embarrassing moment.
Please, share.
Yes. So I'm retired now, but I worked for the city for a bunch of years. And I worked on Church Street in Lower Manhattan. And one morning I get in at 8 a.m. I check in. I go downstairs, I go across the street to the deli to get my buttered roll and coffee. And there's a line of people waiting to get the same. And ahead of me on the line was what I thought was my buddy. Now, no two people in New York look like this guy. So I'm behind him. He's got short crew cut. He's got a cheap suit on with cheap shoes. And he's rather wide. So I'm feeling kind of frisky that morning. I go up behind him. I slide my arms around his belly, and I start bouncing and singing, I believe in miracles. Where are you from? You sexy thing. And he turned his head, and it wasn't him.
Oh, my God. Was it a big guy about? Was he about to deck you? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I could just imagine this.
Well, that's what I thought was coming, but I jumped up right away. I said, "Please, it's a mistake. I thought you were somebody else." He goes, "Why'd you stop?" He had a good sense of humor.
Yeah, lucky you, lucky you.
Lucky me is right.
That's a great story. That you remember. I don't know when it happened, but it's a sort of thing that's permanent. That lives permanently in our brains, doesn't it?
Oh, it's baked in.
I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Larry. 800-848-9222. Life's embarrassing moments. Martin in upstate New York. Oh, you're our buddy. Hi, Martin. Welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi.
Hello there, Walter.
Hello there, Martin.
How are you?
Martin, I'm excited to talk to you in practically a sexual way.
I'm excited that you have this show now.
Thank you, sir.
This is great.
Thank you, sir.
So I heard you say that Man Dummy has a sense of humor, and I don't see it. I honestly don't see where he has a sense of humor. It seems to be all about victimization and Islamophobia.
It was in the context of an event where about 100 different journalists in New York City were having fun with him. They created a play and skits and songs that teased him and made fun of him, but not in a vicious way. It was good-natured. And this,
Did he smile a lot and everything? Smile all the time?
That's his expertise. Nobody smiles more or better or inappropriately than he does.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now, how about an embarrassing moment in your life, my friend?
Another thing is Jimmy Fallon. I listened to him once on the radio.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be doing. You ever watch TV and watch Svengoolie?
Yeah, but you know what's scary is I know what that is, and no one else will know what that is. Nobody.
Well, that's what he was doing on the radio. He was doing Svengoolie on the radio.
Okay.
And I didn't listen to him anymore. Jimmy Fallon is
Listen, all you need to know about the radio, and listen to me very carefully. All you need to know about the radio, Martin, is that you're supposed to listen to me. And then if you miss any part of this, you go on the Red Apple app or on the WABC app and just listen to my past shows. Listen to the mini cast. That's all you need to know about radio. And I thank you very much for calling. Thank you very much, Martin. Ed in Babylon, Long Island, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network at 800-848-9222. Hi.
Walter, you have a great topic. You really do.
Thank you, I think.
Can I ask you what was the inspiration for this topic before I tell you what happened to me?
I will tell you exactly what this happened tonight. This is present tense. Tonight, I was at this dinner that was black tie, and I wasted $250 to rent a tuxedo, a good one. And every time I've rented a tuxedo in my entire life, I always have the same problem, which is the pants won't stay up. Doesn't matter how I adjust the little things, the pants won't stay up. And sure enough, I'm holding this pair of pants with both hands just to walk across the room to get a soda. And my boss is there. His beautiful wife is there.
On Cassatini's, Margo, and there are no belt loops. You couldn't put a belt on.
There are no belt loops. You're absolutely right. You must be an engineer.
I'm a nuclear medicine technologist, but I own a tuxedo that I either lose or I gain weight, and things happen.
Well, and that's the other point, Ed, and thank you for the call. The other point is that no matter when you buy a tuxedo, the next time you put it on, it'll be too small. You can buy it today. It fits you perfectly today. And 2 days later, you put it on and it doesn't fit you anymore. That is the law of tuxedos. Embarrassing moments in our lives. 800-848-9222. We broke a very important story about 2.5 weeks ago with Ross Coulthart. And the story that we broke 2.5 weeks ago was the major general in Arizona, 65 years old, healthy as a horse, a real military guy, not a scary old guy. This was a sharp as a tack military man, a major general, a rank that you and I could never achieve. We don't even have any idea what that insignia looks like. But here was this guy, but he had one big problem. And his big problem is that he knew every single United States of America UFO secret. He knew every secret. And therefore, he was at high risk. Any disclosure, anything he said wrong, or any trigger that might get him to say anything wrong would put his life in danger, and maybe it has. He left without his cell phone. Have you ever left without your cell phone? No. He left without his watch, but he left with his service revolver. Ross Coulthard broke the story on Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling, and here's an update from News Nation's Ross Coulthard.
For the last months, there's been a huge mystery unfurling in the United States, and it's largely disappeared from the attention of the national media. And it's the disappearance of an Air Force general, Major General Neil McCasland. Major General McCasland, as I've explained to your listeners before, is a very, very senior retired Air Force general who, on February the 27th, his wife farewelled him to go to a medical appointment. There was a repairman in the house. He was working on something. He left, did his job and left. And when his wife returned an hour and 10 minutes later, Neil McCasland had disappeared from the face of the earth. Now, the reason why he's such an interesting character is because he's very closely linked to attempts in 2016 by a group of generals and insiders in the intelligence community, including a former head of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, to disclose a big secret, the biggest secret of all, the fact that the United States is allegedly in possession of retrieved non-human alien technology. And it's defying explanation that this general has disappeared off the face of the earth in highly unusual circumstances. We're now a month into the disappearance, and there's no explanation of where he's gone. And moreover, as each week passes, it's now coming out that not only did the general have a colleague called Monica Raza who disappeared a year earlier, there's now a cluster of other defense and intelligence-related scientists who have died or disappeared in curious circumstances. And I won't go through the details of naming them all, but there's now growing concern in Congress. Congressman Tim Burchett, who's obviously a very highly respected congressman who's a member of the so-called UAP caucus, he's confirmed that General McCasland was on the list of people who were planned to be spoken to by Congress in their ongoing investigations into getting to the truth of what the government knows about UAPs, alien craft. Have we recovered alien craft and beings? As incredible as this all may sound, the president just a few weeks ago announced on Truth Social that he does intend declassifying secret UAP files that he's obviously aware of, and he criticized former President Obama for talking about these files and implied that the president, the former president, had in some way breached national security by even talking about them. So we're at a very interesting juncture in the history of the United States, where 80 years on from the mystery of the Roswell alleged crash of two alien craft in 1947, it's beginning to look like the cracks are starting to appear in the biggest secret in American history, probably in world history, that the United States has for the last 80 years concealed evidence of non-human intelligence engaging with this planet. There's another issue I want to talk to you about that I'm going to segue to, but what I will tell you is I think President Trump is under pressure by the national security state to make only a very limited disclosure. I know the president has been briefed about UFOs, about non-human intelligence, aliens and alien life and alien technology that's been recovered by the US. My sources have told me this. But I think he's under enormous pressure from the national security state and from certain private military contractor companies like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman to keep this secret. But there's a bigger secret that the public's not getting to hear about, Ed, and I'm very concerned about it, and it's one thing I really wanted to get to your ears tonight. One of the stories that's not being told is you may remember the drone swarms that were swarming the east coast of the United States in early 2025, late 2024. And there was a lot of concern. It became a congressional issue. It became a major television special investigation that we did on News Nation about these mysterious drones that are swarming sensitive Air Force bases and civilian aircraft areas and causing, I think, severe disruption to these facilities. Well, what I can tell you, they're back. So Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana, which is not far from Shreveport, was attacked by drone swarms during the week of the 9th of March. And this actually disrupted B-52 launches during the Operation Epic Fury attacks against Iran. It's literally the first time that a U.S. Air Force base has been put out of operation temporarily in wartime since World War II. And what's interesting is we've been pushing this investigation at News Limited. There's a lot that, frankly, isn't being explained about these drones. But what we're learning is that attempts to use countermeasures against these drones failed. They're only calling them drones because that's all they could see and imagine they might be. They were lights. They were objects in the sky, and every known counter UAS measure in the possession of the US government, including high pulse microwaves and other systems that have been developed to down these kind of incursions, failed against these craft. And this is where America stores its long-range nuclear missiles and also the long-range standoff cruise missiles. It's one of the most sensitive bases in the world. And what's interesting, these drones, nobody knows anything about them. We don't know if they were fixed wing or quadcopter. We don't even know if they had propellers. We don't know how they were powered. There were 12 to 15 objects, which each wave, and each time they came through, they closed down the airbase. Something very grave is going on in our national security establishment right now, and frankly, nobody's telling the public the truth about what's really going on. A lot of what I'm telling you is actually on the public record. Like, for example, Barksdale Air Force Base, this very sensitive Air Force Base, they've admitted publicly that these disruptions occurred. And a spokesperson has admitted that they were unable to use any kind of counter-drone technology to bring these weapons down. And also the general's disappearance and the disappearance of the other individuals, they are acknowledged, at least to the extent that we know they've happened. What's interesting is that the national legacy media, a lot of the statements that you would expect from the Pentagon, there's a deafening silence. It's just not being reported. The public's not getting told that there are these grave national security threats. I mean, the loss of a major general with some of the most sensitive secrets in his head from 38 years service at the highest levels of the United States Air Force, in any country in the world, this would be a grave national security concern. But the major general's loss has been played down. There's been an attempt to describe what's happened to him as a potential suicide. Lots has been made of the fact that he took a pistol with him, but he didn't take his watch or his mobile phone. Maybe the general left his home because he didn't want to be found, and maybe it was a suicide, some people are suggesting. But we're now a month into this particular individual's disappearance. And there are so many questions being raised now that are anomalous, that don't make sense. How does someone disappear so easily in this landscape, which is largely, albeit mountainous, open country, where a body would be very hard to conceal? There are so many questions about this disappearance that aren't being answered. It's being played down or largely ignored by the authorities. And moreover, there are these ongoing incursions in an active U.S. Air Force base during a war that are not being adequately explained. You're seeing a reduction in the power and influence of legacy media. The big newspapers, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the Boston Globe, you know, the Philly Inquirer, all these great papers have lost staff to online advertising. They've had to reduce budgets, cut costs. All the big TV networks have lost their investigative journalism. And so what's happening now is a lot of the investigative work that's being done is being done by people like me with online shows like my Reality Check show. And it's largely being funded through the work that's being done online. And that's interesting. It's a huge change, but it also means that governments no longer feel the obligation to provide an explanation to these legacy media. So a lot of these big papers and big TV networks that used to do a lot of the heavy lifting in investigative research, they're no longer doing it because they don't have the staff, they don't have the budget. They're lucky if they get an hour or two to research a story, let alone a month or two. And so the kind of investigative journalism that cracked Watergate or the Iran-Contra scandal or any one of the other scandals that have been broken open with tough, hard-nosed investigative journalism, that era, I'm afraid, is well and truly over.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network.
Russ Coulthard from News Nation revealing on this show exclusively that the Major General still has not been found. They don't know where he is, but they sure suspect why he's disappeared. The man knew too much. The conspiracy to quiet him and to silence whistleblowers is real, not imaginary. Walter Sterling, you and I are talking about bigger embarrassments in our life, in our day. There I am at a fancy dinner tonight, rented the tuxedo. Chad Lopez, president of the company, said, yeah, it's got to be black tie. And then he ran away. It's got to be black tie. I'm like, oh, okay. Rented the tuxedo. And every time in my life that I've rented a tuxedo, the same thing has happened. My pants fall down the whole night. George, at 800-848-9222, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling.
Walter, your show is leaving us all spellbound. That other guy who was doing the announcing, he sounds like he could haunt the house and make a living doing that.
And he does. He's the voice of Ancient Aliens. He's the guy on the History Channel. He's the voice of Ancient Aliens.
Correct. And also Creature Feature and Chiller Theater. He can haunt the house and make billions of dollars in that business. But Mommy Tommy wears a beard. There's a reason why he wears a beard. And we have such great talk radio detectives out there. They can figure it out why he wears that beard. He's hiding something with that beard. We know that. With tuxedos, I mean, it's got to be suspenders. And it also helps if you don't have, ready for this? Some guys have the look where they didn't take the coat hanger out of the suit jacket. I don't know what it is. They got the hunchback. It looks like they put the thing on, they left the coat hanger in there. Some people don't wear a tuxedo good. There are ways of fixing that. More room and flexibility is the way to go. You need suspenders. I mean, who's going to put a belt on a tuxedo? You got to be like Cab Calloway or Cesar Romero to do something like to get away with something like that. And I'm fascinated by your show because you do it. You have a great voice too, Walter. I don't know if you don't know that, but the thing is, I don't think people evaluate their own voices. People fall in love with themselves talking, but not exactly what their voice sounds like. But I went to a banquet one time, you know, one of these mashed potato banquets. I had to wear a tuxedo. Luckily, I'm athletic and I'm in pretty good shape where I could get away with wearing a tuxedo. But guys, you know, like Cat Calloway wore a white tuxedo. He did the hidey, hidey, high. You know, I couldn't picture many people at the banquet table doing the hidey, hidey, high. If you could do the hidey, hidey, high in your white tuxedo, you can wear that tuxedo. That's our. I hope they play hidey, high, high with Cab Calloway in a few minutes there. And,
No. They are not going to be doing that. That's just not going to be happening. Now, I'm growing weary of the Cab Calloway analogy because not all of us are as old as you. So either come up with a newer analogy or share us your experience in tuxedos. By the way, you're right about the suspenders. Every time I think, why didn't I get suspenders? Maybe next time I will remember. But did you have an experience with a tuxedo?
Yes, I did have an experience with it. Well, it was an experience where it wasn't there. I took it to the cleaners to be cleaned and everything. And when I got there, apparently they gave it accidentally to somebody else. My tuxedo, that I had to go, and that night I had to go to like a banquet. I call it the mashed potato tour.
Right.
But the thing is, they didn't have my tuxedo. Yeah. And they're looking at me like I did something wrong. And, like, I got to figure out where they lost it. These people today, these businesses, I think they train themselves to keep a straight face and make it look like you caused the problem or you got to solve the problem.
Right.
It's insane.
George,
I'm a little older than Cab Calloway.
Well, it's nothing to admit to. George, I appreciate the call. I've had stuff stolen and lost by dry cleaners, too. Walter M. Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network at 800-848-9222.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile with a message for everyone paying big wireless way too much. Please, for the love of everything good in this world, stop. With Mint, you can get premium wireless for just $15 a month. Of course, if you enjoy overpaying, no judgments, but that's weird. Okay, one judgment. Anyway, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
No, the Florida stories.
Florida, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Florida. I'd give the world to be shoplifting at the Piggly Wiggly. Swamps, alligators, flying roaches, HOAs, iguanas falling from the trees. The folks up north will laugh uproariously when they hear Florida stories. On another side of midnight.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. For our first Florida story, this is an interesting one. What we have here is a shark attack. Now, that doesn't sound too amazing, right? Well, this is starting to get weird because I've been reporting on a lot of shark bites, and this is, I think, the third time in the last few months that I've reported on a shark bite specifically in the Florida Keys. Now, you know, this show is so ridiculous, you probably think this happens every day, but shark bites kind of are relatively rare. The difference about this story, the reason it's making Florida stories, not just because it's a shark bite and, you know, a human being came across the ocean's perfect killing machine. The guy got bit on land. And that kind of blows my mind. I don't think I've ever reported that before. Even as strange as Florida Stories has been over the last, 5 years of reporting here. So I don't know specifically how the shark got on the dock. That is not mentioned in the story. But a guy was fishing off a pier
and there was a shark that was on the dock that bit his leg. Okay, so this is not what any of us pictured at all. But you go through some of these other shark stories, and there begins to be a picture painted, because when you look at some of the other shark bites in the Florida Keys in this same area, they've been pretty weird here. You know, we actually have had plenty of shark bites that are in the water, but I found where the last two that I reported on the show were from dudes that were spearfishing. Do you know what spearfishing is? Okay, so you're imagining, okay, you walk out into a river or maybe into the ocean or, you know, off a beach somewhere with a spear and you try and stab a fish like in Blue Lagoon or something. But in this one, there's an added level of Florida difficulty because they are spearfishing about 70 feet underwater. So these guys are in scuba gear and they're going down into these schools of fish and trying to stab them at 70 feet deep. And so there's a weird thing that happens once you are moderately successful in spearfishing is that, you know, you hit a couple fish here and there, and all of a sudden the water is just chummed up with blood, and here comes the sharks. Now, something I would like to point out, as you can't see me, you're going to have to take my word for it, but as an American who is 1/4 Hispanic and 3/4 white, I'm going to have to play my 1/4 Hispanic card here and look at the white side of me and be like, this is a phenomenon that is only happening with white Americans. There is not any other race of people that for just funsies are putting on scuba gear and going underwater and spearfishing, not for fun. Not for food, but just for fun. Like this is your recreation. Fine. You almost deserve to get bit by a shark. So white people, there's a little internal soul searching we need to do, because I'm tired of us hurting ourselves in such weird, extreme X Games type Florida circumstances. It's really embarrassing. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, the headline says quite simply, the shocking moment. A 63-year-old man is brutally attacked inside a Florida movie theater after asking a couple to move a pre-booked VIP seat. It is 100% exactly what you think. If a 63-year-old Florida man shows up at the theater, and these days you can reserve certain seats if you buy them in advance on the app or something like that. And so the guy shows up, someone's in his seat, and I guess he wasn't, I don't know, maybe he wasn't diplomatic enough about it. I'm not blaming anybody here, but it escalates into a fist fight, and you know, a 63-year-old man versus a guy who looks like he is in his 20s. It's not even close. He falls over, and then there's, I don't know, it's only about 15 seconds of mayhem, but the 63-year-old Florida man ended up having to go to the hospital for this, and police did not find the guy that beat him up because he and his date immediately left. And so, I mean, was it worth it? You fought over a seat, and now neither one of you got it? I mean, of course it doesn't make sense. This is Florida stories, but the video's brutal. Don't go watch it. Just take my word for it. It's exactly what you think it is. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What? For our next Florida story, we are going to go to Sarasota. And in this one, I don't know, we might just have to skip this one. Let me read you the headline, and then we can all decide together if you want to hear the rest of this story. The headline says, quite simply, Sarasota CNA accused of molesting assisted living residents at multiple facilities, police looking for more victims. You want to do that one, or you want to skip it? You want to skip it? Okay, we'll skip that one. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Florida man steals a Captain Morgan statue. And this is exactly what it sounds like, too. But in this video, yeah, you're missing the why. Why does this guy steal a Captain Morgan statue? And like, what are you talking about, a Captain Morgan statue? Like a figurine? No, you should see this thing, man. This thing fills up the entire bed of his pickup truck. He's got a black pickup. And he knocks this, he backs it up to this big statue of Captain Morgan that looks like it's sitting outside of a gas station or a bar or something. I can't tell. And he dumps it over into the back of his truck, and it fills up the whole thing. Like, he can't even shut the tailgate. And it's a beautiful statue. It's majestic. And so, I'm not saying I understand why he stole it, but I can tell you that I wish I had one of these. I'd be ecstatic to have one of these Captain Morgan statues. This is a glorious piece of art. I'm a big fan of Captain Morgan to begin with. I'm just a big fan of pirates all around. And, what do you do with this? Do you keep it? Is there a black market for Captain Morgan? Because, you would think that's not likely, but
I don't know. I think I'd be dumb enough to buy that if it was on the. Some guy came up, was like, "Hey, dude, you want a Captain Morgan statue?" I wouldn't care. I'd be like, "Don't tell me if it's hot or not." My answer is yes. What's your price? I think that's where I would be. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Say it again. All right, that's fine. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. There's a there are a number of conspiracies and things that you and I need to deal with. We need to know what happened to the major general who went out into the desert in Arizona 2.5 weeks ago. This is not a librarian. This is not a retired person. It's not somebody who lives at the villages. It's a major general who participated in a bicycle race right before he disappeared. He was in charge of the military secrets of the UFOs. Now, I haven't heard a word from our Secretary of War about a major general disappearing. And when did he announce that he was disappearing? When was that announcement made? It was shortly after the President of the United States said, you know what, I'm going to reveal all the UFO secrets. How do you feel about this? 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
If you work in university maintenance, Grainger considers you an MVP because your playbook ensures your arena is always ready for tip-off. And Grainger is your trusted partner, offering the products you need all in one place, from HVAC and plumbing supplies to lighting and more, and all delivered with plenty of time left on the clock, so your team always gets the win. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, visit Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dare he? Where's Bill? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Dave, what do you make of the disappearance now for 2.5 weeks of the major general who vanished? How do you feel about that? What do you think that mystery is?
Well, I think we're delving into a much bigger conspiracy theory here, Walter, because it's not only Major General retired Neil McCasland who's gone missing, but in the last year they have had now six scientists, with all having ties to the UFO movement, who have given testimony to the United States government about UFOs and unidentified aerial phenomena that have just vanished, disappeared, or turned up dead under mysterious circumstances. The most famous being General McCasland, who was at his home in New Mexico, and his wife was going to a doctor's appointment. He had a repairman coming over. His wife was gone for about an hour, and by the time that she had got back, he was gone. His glasses were still on the counter. He was known for wearing glasses. His wallet was still on the counter. However, his revolver was gone.
All right, now listen, I have to reestablish who we're talking about, because we're using his last name. I just keep using Major General because no one will remember his last name. The Major General in Arizona that Ross Coulthart and you have both talked about disappeared 2.5 weeks ago. All the evidence that it's weird and bizarre also has been rolled out. No phone, no watch, but took his service revolver. What the hell is that? And
well, I mean, yeah.
Let me finish. This is a mystery. And the man also carried with him something incredibly dangerous. Every military secret about UFOs, every story, this guy had it. Plus, he was working in laboratories with other military people about with propellants, material that we need to get to outer space. He knew the formulas of the chemicals. He had all of this. Now we're going to conference you with Dave. Dave, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Dave Scott, who is the host of Spaced Out Radio. Dave has some theories about what happened to the Major General. Dave, welcome to the big show. Yeah. You're now part of the media.
Yes, I was thinking about the disappearance of the Major General McCaslin and Monica Reznor, and I think I know where they are.
Do you have your radio on?
No.
Wonder what that is. No, go ahead, Dave. Tell us where they are.
Well, I think they're with T.J. McCormick, because he's disappeared also.
Thank you for the call. Thank you very much for the call. At 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I don't know what he's talking about. So, Mr. Scott, go ahead with your theories. I promise you that will be the last conferencing I will commit tonight.
Oh, yeah, I don't mind. Well, the interesting part of the name that he did bring up was Monica Reza. Reza was somebody who was very close to McCaslin. She, in California, back in June of 2025, was out for a hike in one of the mountain ranges there, where she vanished under mysterious circumstances. And what made that kind of interesting when she disappeared was that search and rescue was still on the mountains looking for her when allegedly she had already been dead. And nobody had told the search and rescue teams that they had found a body, which they hadn't. But apparently they had already proclaimed her to be deceased and had a funeral for her when the investigation wasn't even over, which makes this story a little bit more interesting.
Well, Dave, yes, it makes it more interesting. But the fact is they would not have had a funeral for her if they didn't know for darn sure she was dead.
Would they?
Pull this together. Why do you believe that she was dead, and why do you believe they had a funeral for her? Those are big words for somebody who we actually know.
Well, that's the million-dollar mystery right there. She was another brain, multi-billion-dollar brain, like General McCaslin, okay, who knew a lot of secrets. She had developed a specific metallurgical technology that could be used on weaponry such as airplanes as well as missiles and other sorts of military armament. Okay, she was somebody who was working closely with McCaslin, and she had also testified regarding the UFO subject. So it's very interesting. Tim Burchett, congressperson who has been very, very loud and boisterous about the UFO worlds, actually went on a podcast in the last week and basically claimed that this is something that needs to be addressed. At the time, there were only 5 scientists that were linked to this that had all testified, according to Burchett, that they had all testified towards the UFO story, and they all seem to have had nefarious things happen, including 3 murdered in their own homes or around their home yards. So there is now a 4th one. I haven't got her name just yet, but another female scientist who disappeared a few months ago when she had taken her daughter's lunch to her school. After she dropped off the daughter's lunch, she has vanished. She was involved in some sort of military technology as well as somebody who was also involved in learning about UFOs. Now, I don't know if she testified or not, but this is another person to add to the list of what's going on. Scientists over time have seemed to have had not a long lifespan if they have been dealing with UFOs. In fact, a good friend of mine, independent researcher and citizen journalist Courtney Marcassani, actually put out a report yesterday saying that there have been around 62 scientists over the years that have mysteriously vanished or passed away under mysterious circumstances after going deep into the UFO story. So is this a conspiracy that we see going on here?
Yes.
Or is
yes.
this just...
And this congressman who we tried to get in touch with for the past 48 hours, who refused to to get back to us. I will have him on next week for a congressman, an incredible one at that, to say these people are disappearing. And there's the pattern is that they all know about UFO stuff and they all worked in the lab with the chemicals and the chemistry. They disappeared. Now, forget about that. They disappeared. Those are facts. Why? Why would they be killed or kidnapped or made to disappear? What is it that they're handling that is such a critical secret? What is it that they're handling that cannot be told to you and me?
Well, and that's the big story. I mean, if you take somebody, if we focus on General McCaslin, who is the biggest name out of this, the major general had what I call a billion-plus dollar brain. I mean, Walter, if you added up the cost of you and me being in radio, we might make $250 in brain power. But this guy had about a billion-plus dollar brain with all of the information and technology and notes and signatures that he had around his life. I mean, this guy saw the darkest and deepest secrets that the secret programs are covering up, including UFOs. In fact, in 2015, he was named in a WikiLeaks leak in emails to John Podesta and the singer of Blink 182, Tom DeLonge, talking about the UFO secret programs. So this gentleman was very much tapped in on absolutely everything. And if you think about it, if it was something nefarious rather than a robbery or just a regular kidnapping, if there is such a thing, you would think that, you know, we would have heard something by now or found a body or at least some sort of trace evidence. But the fact that he just up and vanished comes to two things. Either one, the aliens came and got him, or number two, there is something going on with secret groups looking to take these type of people.
Yeah, but Dave Scott, you're an expert, and you can talk to Dave if you have questions about this or theories, ways to solve the mysteries. I want to hear 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I don't want to talk in terms of possibilities. I want to hear what Dave Scott thinks the answer is. This is not an SAT. It's not a math test. You can't flunk it. You are an expert. You've studied this all your life. I want to know what you think is happening, not what could be happening.
Well, if we're going to go down that road, I think with the amount of scientists that have now been taken or had their life ended in regard to something, I think this proves that the programs, these secret programs that we hear of for so many years, these secret governments, these shadow governments, are cleaning house. I really believe that. I believe that they are taking away any possibility of bringing the UFO story to the American public.
The only reason that these people would be killed or kidnapped or made to disappear or killed is money. What is the money? What money is flowing here? What is the profit motive? They don't care if a secret gets out. They'll just deny it. That's what they've always done. There must be, to end a life of a highly trained and expensively trained U.S. government official, there must be money involved. Where is that money flowing?
Trillions upon trillions of dollars over the years, Walter. I mean, how many times do you hear your government all of a sudden say, we can't account for $3.2 trillion here, $1.8 trillion here? Where do you think that is going? That's going into the deep, dark programs of the U.S. government and the U.S. military-industrial complex. The money just doesn't vanish. I mean, I don't know about you, but just as an example, when they were trying to explain a number of years ago when they were redoing Air Force One and they put two refrigerators in, costing $40 million apiece. When's the last time a fridge cost $40 million?
Well, they're very special. They're very special fridges, Dave. Hey, you can talk to Dave Scott, and I'd like to hear your beliefs, because your beliefs are probably better than anything we're going to get in an actual newspaper. I want to know what you think. Phone number, 800-848-9222, 800-848-922. Let's solve some of these mysteries. We can do that because the possibilities are limited. You're smarter than most people, This is the great shift, the late shift. We have time to think about these things. And I want to know how you feel. What do you think is happening where these highly trained, very effective whistleblowers, successful members of the military who know everything about the UFOs, most everything about the UFOs, where are they going? Why? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling, Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
800-848-9222. You and I are speaking with Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio. On YouTube, you can find every show he's ever done, Spaced Out Radio, an expert on all things UFOs, metaphysical, time portals, Bigfoot. Pamela, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks. Welcome, Pamela.
Good morning. Was the Today Show doing any investigative reporting on UFOs? I mean, any journalist, anything?
Why do you ask? Why do you ask?
Disappearance?
Why do you ask?
To connect to the Guthrie disappearance, like as a warning to back off?
What would the connection be? Why would the elderly mother of the host of a fluffy show have anything to do with the disappearance and death of people who are creating chemistry and deconstructing UFOs?
Well, it is, morning news show, granted, but it is a news show. Who knows? Who knows what somebody stumbled upon?
I know it's in the news division, Pamela. I'm sorry, Carson Daly News. I don't see it. It's a fair question. I can't agree with you, but thank you very much for calling. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Rich, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network with Dave Scott and Walter Sterling.
Yeah, hi. To talk about conspiracies, I got two radios in my house. I can't tune in ABC. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I think that's a pretty serious problem. Thank you very much for the call. 800-848-9222. Dave Scott, other things you're working on?
Well, right now I am preparing for building my team for my investigation into my Flight 21 crash site area, going to look for Sasquatch, because I think the snow has officially melted where I could finally potentially get out to my spot.
All right. So Dave? You have to start from scratch.
Yes.
Don't know what the crash site is. Share with us, because this sounds intriguing. I want to hear about this, but please tell us what the whole setup here.
Well, I was going to come out and say that next. So Flight 21 is Canada's largest unsolved mass murder. It happened on July 8th, 1965, where a DC-6 plane from the now-defunct Canadian Pacific Airways was traveling from Vancouver up towards Whitehorse, Yukon. What happened was, when it got over my community, which was about hour and a half into the flight, a bomb went off in one of the bathroom stalls in the back and blew the plane apart, killing 52 people. Now, in 2018, we started investigating that location paranormally, as it was about 25 miles into the forest from the closest town where I live, called 100 Mile House, British Columbia. And when we started investigating there, we believe we did the first ever paranormal investigation at that location, which we did get a lot of ghostly attraction, but we weren't prepared for being in the middle of the forest and having interaction with the legendary creature they call Sasquatch.
And what interaction did you have with Sasquatch?
It started with hearing this weird talking in the trees. And it was like a mumbling, grumbling sound, very loud. It happened twice. And we thought nothing of it because we were there looking for paranormal. We're like, well, that's a weird sounding ghost. It wasn't until we went back to the crash site where my best friend Merle, who's the paranormal investigator, was up by one of the pieces of the landing gear when all of a sudden the bushes around him started shaking and he started hearing this growling and huffing and snarling coming from the trees. We thought it was a bear. We had our armed guard there, our good friend Mark, with us. And as Merle comes running down the path towards Mark, who was armed, Mark had his rifle turned on another something. We don't know what it was. We didn't see it. But all we knew is that it was coming to us on 2 feet, and it was big.
How big?
And the exit happened to be...
How big?
Well, Mark estimated the sounds to be coming from about 6 to 7 feet high.
And what do you estimate they were?
Probably around the same. Now, the interesting part, like people will see this, well, maybe it was a person. Maybe it was somebody there. No, where I live in a community of 2,500 people. When you are 25 miles into the forest, there's nobody around. There's nobody playing games or tricks on you. There's nobody, going to, it's much like being in hunting in the U.S. where you just don't make fun of animals or mock other animals or creatures in the forest, because there is an opportunity that somebody is going to think you're an animal, predatory maybe, and pull the trigger on you. You just don't take that chance. And that's what it had come down to. Now, the interesting part about it is Sasquatch is known to push you towards exits to get you out of the area. And where these two had stationed themselves, if that's in fact what they were pushing us towards the exit, which was a path out of the forest in that area. And ever since then, we've had interactions at that location with not only Sasquatch, indeed, Walter, I've sent you pictures of some strangeness coming from there, from footprints to a picture of a Sasquatch looking at us in the trees. We've also had interactions there with UFOs. We've had interactions with ghosts from the crash site that we believe. We've had aliens walking through the trees. So if you're familiar with the television show Hunt for Skinwalker Ranch, this area is like a mini area of that ranch in the middle of the dense forest.
All right, Billy in Canada wants to talk with Dave Scott, UFO theory. Welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks with Walter Sabo and Dave Scott. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. How do we find Dave Scott on live?
SpacedOutRadio.com. You could go to our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio, or we're on any major podcast network. You could download it for free.
Thank you, Dave Scott. 800-848-9222, 29 minutes past the hour, 29 minutes past the hour. We're on great radio stations throughout the country like KDKA, KMOX, and WGN in Chicago. WGN in Chicago. That's how they say it, They say Chicagoland. Walter Sterling. Now, we have so much to discuss. One of the things that happened this week that disturbs me, because it just was in passing. And one of the things I've learned is that, yes, you and I like to read newspapers online, but the fact is, if there's a paper print edition of that newspaper, I always find other stories that never make it online. And I found this week in the New York Post an article that disturbs me. It's rattling me to this very second. I'll tell you what it is. There's this annoying woman who was the COO of FaceTime. And what was her name? Sandy Sandberg or something Sandberg. And she wrote this book called Lean In. Lean In. And now it would be good if that book was about getting skinny, but it's not. It's about how to be the most annoying person in the office. That's what she has written. She's written a handbook on how can I be the most annoying person in the office. And it was called Lean In. It was for young women on how to be successful and what to do in situations in the office to assert themselves, gain equal footing with men, how to take control of a situation, how to be in charge. This woman had enough stock in Facebook to have billions of dollars. She had billions of dollars when she was CEO of Facebook, billions of dollars. And she was giving advice to people making $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 on how to lean in and get to be in charge. Well, now, obviously, if you have $1 billion or even just a spare million, your situation and your challenges at work are very different because the key situation at work has been removed from you. And the key situation at work for anybody is, if I do this, will I get fired and not have any more money and lose my home? Brave actions, initiatives, innovative ideas, pushing the company to go this way or that. Even if you're working in a nail salon, a beauty salon, a small retail store, there's a limit to how many cool, groovy new ideas you're going to give. Ms. Sandberg at Facebook did not consider any of that when she wrote the book, Lean In. Well, she left Facebook, which I'm sure was a relief to all of the women who she was pushing, all of the women who were making $98,000 a year and think they were doing well. And they are, but they're not going to be leaning in at any time. But can you imagine? Now, you know who this woman is. You've met this woman, the one who thinks that she has a superior formula for other women at work. It has been my personal experience. I've witnessed it over and over again that women at work are not always the best advocates, coaches, cheerleaders for other women at work. This is something that you're not allowed to speak about. Women are never going to admit to, but they know usually a woman working for a woman boss is hell. It's a special kind of hell because, gee, you want to be embracing a woman in a leadership role. You want to see a woman do really well, la, 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 la. Well, guess what? Usually, when you're working for a woman boss, if you're a woman, it's tough. There's jealousy. There's envy. There's a lack of candor. There's a race. And I've seen it in other situations. I've seen it on airplanes. For years, I'd see it on airplanes. If I wanted a drink and there was a woman across the aisle from me who wanted a drink and it was a woman flight attendant, I'd get that drink first. Women flight attendants, I suspect till this second, do not take as good a care of women passengers as they take care of men passengers. Have you seen this? Have you experienced this? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. As a rule, in a service dynamic, if there's a man and there's a woman who needs service, customers, the woman in charge of giving that service will favor the man. I've seen it over and over again to the point where sometimes I've intervened and I said, no, she was first. Take care of her first. And they're always very huffy with me. They're always very huffy with me. But now this Facebook woman, this Sandberg woman, she writes this book, Lean In. And now when she says to lean in, she's got two nannies at home, two for each kid. Maybe she has nine nannies for three kids. She has a gardener, and she has a home with what? What? With water features. She has a home with water features. One of the sure signs of success and wealth in America, as you know, is a front yard that has a water feature. When I was a kid, there was a, down the block from my house in Maplewood, New Jersey, there was a home that had a fountain, three-layer fountain, and lights of different colors at night. This was the most amazing thing I ever saw. I couldn't imagine anything like this. They had to be so rich to have a fountain with three levels, lights. And then next door to us, they were starting to, with Japanese, their front yard, put in a lot of rocks, river rocks. Oh, they love those river rocks. A lot of river rocks and special grass that you and I don't know where you even buy. You don't know. Where the hell did they get the golf green grass? Where does that come from, the golf green grass? Three times real fast. Where does that come from? And I said to my neighbor, I said, well, you're going to put in a stream? You're going to put a goldfish stream in the front yard? Because that's real wealth. If you have a water feature, that's real wealth. You're doing great if you do that. Well, he's thinking about it. He isn't sure if he wants to. I said, you really need to do it. Nothing will establish your wealth like a stream with goldfish. Well, this Sandberg person was the COO of Facebook. Now she quits. And what does she do? She establishes a nonprofit. What do we know about nonprofits? We know that at root, they are corrupt. I didn't say illegal, but they are morally bankrupt because a nonprofit lacks the things that we humans, especially we Americans, need. We need goals. We need clear markers for success. We need to know that, yes, this is what we have to do to be achieving and successful, and we can let people look at our work. That's who we are. A nonprofit has none of those things. The purpose of a nonprofit is to not make a profit. Nonprofit. It's to make no profit. Well, we're not really good at that. Well, what the Sandberg woman did is she set up an organization called, ready? You won't believe it. Lean In, Inc. Lean In. She's created a nonprofit called Lean In. And what is its purpose? When you read carefully in the New York Post article, when you really drill down, like people like to do in academia, when you drill down, when you unpack it, I hate that phrase. I hate that phrase almost as much as people saying, what's the vibe? What is the vibe? Shut up with the vibe. Shut up. I don't want to hear about your vibe. Shut the up. What is the vibe of that restaurant? The vibe of the restaurant is they're going to overcharge for a small portion and maybe you'll talk yourself into a dessert. That's the vibe of all restaurants, except for a good diner where the portions will be too big. It's never enough. It's never just right. It's either too much or too little. But I digress. The name of her nonprofit is Lean In. And what is their purpose? Their purpose is to help gender-fluid women adjust to the workplace and the workplace to adjust and tolerate gender-fluid women and gender-vague people. Well, that's how it started. And then we got a new president. And the new president said there are two genders, which means that federal funding for fluid gender stuff will not be forthcoming, which is what he did. That's what he was doing. No, we're not going to give you money to find out what gender you are. That was determined at birth. It's very clear. But the Sandberg person, she says in the quote, we're pulling back on some of those initiatives. Now we're looking at other ways to help women in the workplace. She's pulling back. We're going to recognize more traditional gender roles. No kidding. We're going to look for more traditional gender roles, she's saying. To make matters worse, she has appointed a CEO who's been in the workplace about 3 months. Very young CEO who's a wizard at AI, apparently, and she's becoming the CEO. Well, there are many people already working at Lean In, and they have no interest in working for a 12-year-old CEO. They're not really intrigued by this idea. And four or five people at Lean In, the nonprofit, have quit. They've resigned. To me, I have no problems with a young CEO. I was way too young for many jobs. I was a nightmare for all around me. I get it. I understand what she's going to go through. However, what I can't believe is that the Sandberg person is paying some of her executives in a nonprofit $290,000 a year. Multiple executives at Lean In, the nonprofit, are making $290,000 a year. I thought if you're working at a nonprofit, the purpose is to be spiritual, do good, and earn as little as possible to make those sacrifices. Bob at 848-9222, 800-848-9222, welcome to the Walter Sterling experience. Well, yes.
Are you not aware that the NFL is a not-for-profit? The NFL commissioner makes $50 million a year.
I am aware that they set it up as a nonprofit. Yeah, and the
but they make plenty of money.
Yeah, they do make plenty of money.
Why do you come on the radio and say not-for-profits don't make money? They make a lot of money. Depending on how you set it up and depending on what you're doing.
I didn't say they don't make money. I said that they are designed to not show a profit. They're designed to the eyes of the IRS to not show a profit. If they show a profit, it totally screws up their tax status. They can't show a profit on paper. He ran away. A coward. Why would he be such a coward? Which gives me permission to talk about the NFL. I'm like, wait a minute. So these people are playing with a ball. They're throwing a ball, and they're getting $20 to $30 million a year to play 14, 16 games. How many games do they play, guys? And they throw a ball. They get $20 to $30 million a year. They sustain lifetime injuries. And that's a sport? No, it's not a sport. That's why they call it the game of football. It's not a sport. Baseball's a sport. Bowling is a sport. Football, not a sport. I have never understood it. I will never understood it. And therefore, I believe the only purpose of the NFL is to run a gambling ring. It's just about gambling. It's betting on the game. I don't understand what downs are. I don't understand what flags are. I don't get any of it. And because I have a limited brain, I get very confused. Like I'll see every play to me looks the same. Here are these very large people with a lot of equipment on running at each other, falling into a pile, whistles go off, flags go off, and then there's a commercial. It's a mystery to me. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. This Sandberg person, she paying $290,000 a year to people who are working in a nonprofit that is unspecified in terms of what are the benefits that they offer. And what benefits they were offering were to help gender fluid people or gender vague people deal with their life. And I'm like, really? That's the best they can do? That's the best they can do. All right, let me go over here. You know, oh, yeah. But then there's more information about Area 51. Let's explore this.
Andromedans tell you that the Alpha Draconians are here now. Where?
There are 1,833 of them that have been living underground between 100 and 200 miles beneath the surface. They've been here. Some of them have been here a long, long time. They have lifespans that are thousands of years. They're carnivorous.
What?
They are not friendly to mankind. At least the ones that are here.
Away. And that's you decide that. I don't have to decide that.
And they they won't eat a dead human. It has to be alive at the time of the killing. Their preference is children. You know, and we've been told, you shouldn't talk about that. You know, there other people say, well, you better not talk about the reptilians. Well, you know, bull. You know, why not? According to the Andromedans, they're responsible for 31,712 children disappearing in the last 25 years from the United States. These children were food. And I'm supposed to just shut up and not say anything about it because people don't want to hear it? That's tough. You know, Westchester County, in the last 5 years, 3,000 children in Westchester County, New York, have vanished without a trace. Where are they going? Why are we allowing this to happen? Why should people stay in denial about it?
Now, how are they able to do this? How are they able? How are they able to do it? How are they able to come up out of this from underground and do it? Or do they have?
There are tunneling systems working everywhere. They're being helped by the Greys, and also there are groups within the higher echelon that are actually helping them acquire this.
So human beings are abducting the kids and giving them to the Greys, who in turn give them to the Alpha Draconians.
That's right. That's part of the deal. They won't come up as long as we feed them down there. You understand? It's about human beings selling themselves out. The echelon attitude here, the needs of the few outweigh the needs of humanity. And sorry, that just isn't right. You know, but it's going to have to be humanity that's going to rise up and take the stand. You're just going to have to turn off your televisions. They're going to have to get in their car. They're going to have to fire everybody in Washington, D.C. that knows and does nothing. And they're going to have to do something. You know, this apathy's got to end. Otherwise, the way we live is going to end. Period. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, and I'm not coming from a fear space. I'm really quite angry about the apathy and the fact that, you know, when people give lectures and try to tell them, people want to stand up and fight with them. Look at what's happening around us. The indications are everywhere, everywhere. The truth is now an obscure thing. You know, the lie is the norm. There's something wrong here.
There's something wrong because there's too much math and too many reasons to believe that there are elites and creatures that come up and seize our children and live or need or imagine they need to commit cannibalism in order to get what they want. What do they want? If you're very rich and you can have anything you want and you're denied nothing, then the next opportunity is, well, what is appealing? Anything that you're told throughout your life that you can't have, I'll make a simple example for you. Your mother was furious when she found a Playboy under your bed. She was very annoyed. And as a result, the minute you became an adult, lived in a dorm room, moved out, the first thing you did was buy a Playboy because she made it appealing. Now, if you've bought the Maseratis, if you have the mansions, if you have the women, if you have all the stuff, and you're sitting there bored and staring at the ceiling, then you hear from another rich friend this. Listen to me. You hear that there is a special kind of blood that if you drink, it will erase your fears and it will keep you looking young. And you're an actress or an actor, and looking young is incredibly important. But you see, in order to get this kind of blood, it can only come from a living human child. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222.
Hey, Walter Sterling, this is your cousin Breezy. Listen, I think that it's time that you took a little break, so I'm going to play a song that I actually introduced years ago right here on WABC Radio. So, Walter, hit the trail, and I'll take care of business.
Make it all alone. Remember, no one is big enough to go alone. Just ask the lonely, they know the hurt and pain of losing a love. The young and foolish laugh at love, slowly run away. Confident and sure that fate will bring another love their way. But ask the lonely, how faintly a heart can yearn for losing a love.
all night long. This is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
On a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free. As he plays his kazoo, my love.
Sterling, every damn night, for me and you.
You know what's great is that I'm on the Red Apple Audio Network, WABC, KMOX, WGN, and I'm eating in your ear right now. That's the best thing about me. Worse than that, I wanted to eat a Pop-Tart, and they didn't have my flavor, which would be blueberry, cherry. No, they're all gone. So I have to eat a Nutri-Grain. I didn't want a Nutri-Grain. Those are my challenges. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. And tonight I am blessed with Bill and Tony. And Bill and Tony are the sound engineers, and they are the final screener between me and the Wild West. I consider every Midnight Misfit who calls this show to be, you know, the Wild West. We don't know what's going to come out. And I love to take phone calls. The reason I love to take phone calls is I know secrets about radio programming that most hosts do not know. And what I know is that the greatest attention that a listener has is the minute I go to a phone call. That is the peak of attention from a listener because it's an even match. I don't know what's going to come out of the call. And the listener doesn't know what's going to come out of the speaker. These are unscripted calls. I've also known radio stations that scripted the calls, and that isn't as much fun. I've also known radio stations in parts of the world where they never had call-in radio. Then a call-in radio station went on the air. And then we did focus groups, and we asked people, so do you like this radio station where people call in and they go on the air and they talk on the air? And they go, you mean I can actually call? Yes. Those aren't actors? No. But you see, they had never heard a radio station take phone calls before. They thought those were actors. These are not actors. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. To me, Walter Sterling, one of the more logical theories about the Jeffrey Epstein shenanigans was actually revealed by Kash Patel. When Kash Patel was being hammered, why don't you release all the files? Why don't you release all the pictures? Why don't you release all the films? He basically said, it's the most disgusting stuff you've ever seen. It proves nothing. It's child pornography. I can't even release it because it is, but it was bigger than that. The way he was answering it, he was scared of it. There was fear. This is a head of the FBI. This is a tough guy, but he was afraid. And people said, well, you know, he's afraid of annoying the president. He was afraid of revealing political things. I didn't think he was afraid of that at all. I thought he was afraid of something much more sinister. And what I believe is that when you have people with enough money and nothing to do, they start to look for dangerous hobbies. You know, first it goes to like jet skiing. That's pretty dangerous. But then it goes far beyond that. And I believe what happened was referred to by Army Hammer. Army Hammer.
Paige's social media followers began noticing bruising on her back and thighs.
Did he beat you up?
It was never like that. It was always biting, like slapping, hitting, like, you know, sexual though. It wasn't like the traditional like abuse or anything like that. Ultimately, like I just wanted to please him. And in that moment, I would have let him do anything, which I think is the scariest part of this.
She also says Hammer literally branded her with the initial of his first name.
He carved a letter into your skin?
Yeah, he did. He just carved an A into me.
It got even more bizarre, Paige says, when Hammer brought up cannibalism.
He would say, oh, I want to remove your ribs. We're going to find a doctor in L.A. And I want to smoke them and eat them.
He wanted to smoke them and eat them. This is an oil heir. It's not Arm and Hammer. It's Army Hammer. Handsome movie actor. Successful movie actor. Married movie actor. But raised in a very dysfunctional, very rich family. And he started promoting cannibalism. And you and I will share and talk about that in just seconds. I'm Walter Sterling, and this is Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, now listen, this is Gord McGill on Another Side of Midnight. Now, Gord, in addition to what you and I are going to talk about, is a known Canadian. And the reason that I knew you were Canadian is that in America, in the United States, we call it Gordon. But the minute I saw that you're Gord, I knew that you were Canadian. What is that about, by the way?
Oh, we're just lazy and we don't want to say too much.
Yeah, I don't believe that. Now, now Gord is very busy. I had to beg with his team to talk with me tonight because he's at a big convention. What's the name of the convention?
It's the Mid-America Trucking Show in Louisville, Kentucky, the world's largest trucking industry conference and trucker party.
About how many people do you think are there?
Usually they get about 55,000 people through the door over 3 days every year.
How annoyed are you that Bucky's won't allow 18-wheelers except at one stop?
I think Bucky's is doing their own thing. They've got a great product and a great system, and I understand why they want to keep some of the riffraff out.
Understood. I believe there is a conspiracy in North America against truckers.
It's not a conspiracy. It's out in the open.
Please share with us the details of that horror.
The details are so much that I had to write a whole book about it. I've got this book out now called End of the Road, Inside the War on Truckers, which examines this conspiracy, which is really, like most conspiracies, a series of government, corporate, and bureaucratic mistakes, bad policy, bad economics, and then bad reactions to problems that don't actually deal with the problem, but just further propagating while pretending that they're actually fixing it, which is what government does.
On Another Side of Midnight, we've had a number of truckers on, and they have explained to me the rules and regulations that the trucking industry, the federal government, opposes on them. And I realize that every committee responsible for their rules and regulations is manned by people who have never driven a truck, probably have never been in a truck cab, and yet they're putting out insane rules about, gee, after this number of hours, you have to park for a half hour, and if you're stuck in the middle of a city, good luck to you. I'm like, that's all I needed to hear. It's like, you have an incredible challenge to make a living.
This is true, yes. Those people, I like to refer to them as spreadsheet brains or the email job cased. They have no experience with reality. They never get their hands dirty. They probably never sweat for a living. And yes, organizations like the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, which I understand has 1,150 employees, I think maybe only one or two of them have ever driven a truck or been involved in the trucking industry in their capacity as a driver getting the work done.
In the rules and regulations, what is the, for you personally, the most draconian rule that exists over the trucking industry? The one rule, if I could get rid of this one, I'd be happy for an hour.
The electronic logging device mandate.
What's that? Explain.
It puts the eye of Sauron in your truck and eliminates your Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure and places you under the panopticon of state.
This is a camera inside the cab?
This is a monitoring device that tracks your every move in order that it can maintain your hours of service and prevent you from cheating. But the problem is that did not address the fundamental incentive structure by which truckers get paid. And once the ELD mandate was implemented, all of the crashes, collisions, and aggressive driving that it sought to reduce actually increased. And then because the ELD technology, the people who produce it, are allowed to self-certify with the government, all kinds of back doors were put in it. And now a lot of the gangsters that have flooded into the industry from overseas are abusing those back doors and forcing the guys who are supposed to be not working over their hours to work twice as many hours. So the ELD mandate is basically erasing your privacy as a worker and actually allowing the parasites and bottom feeders and bad actors in trucking to make things worse for the drivers who are being forced to work longer hours than they should be by law.
What did it do specifically that causes more problems in terms of safety? What is it that it has done to put drivers having to take more unsafe actions?
Right. So the problem is hours of service regulation, and the deeper problem is detention. Many truck drivers would just like to drive, and that's the only time they're being paid. Across the customers we service, many distribution centers, warehouses, grocery store chain warehouses, they eat up an enormous amount of truckers' time. This has been studied by MIT. 40% of the United States trucking fleet capacity is sitting, waiting to be loaded or unloaded at any given time. That's the real challenge. That's the real problem, which begets all of the others. And nobody's bothered dealing with that because it's easier to just punish the guys trying to do the work.
Your opinion, when a truck driver is doing their job and they're going across the country, Canada or the U.S., is there, in among drivers, is there one highway that they dread? They've got to take it, but it has the most aggressive police. It has the most aggressive radar. It is the most, the one they go, please don't make me go on that highway.
I mean, at the moment, there's a number of those highways, and it has less to do with the cops these days and has more to do with the dingbats that the government's been issuing CDLs to and allowed the industry to be parasitized by. So Interstate 81, going from like the Northeast down along Blue Ridge Parkway, Interstate 40, especially out west where it's just beat to crap through New Mexico and Arizona, Interstate 70 in Indiana, which just absolutely destroys your equipment, and just incredible amounts of traffic these days, which is the bigger problem for us.
Unmanned tolls, license plate readers, better or worse?
I mean, it's better to not have to slow down to pay tolls, just as long as that's not like tied into the surveillance panopticon, and quite often those things are tied together.
Explain technically what that means.
That means that like there's technology that's always tracking trucks, and it can be used to punish you rather than just collect money.
Trivia question: why is the weigh station always closed?
Government workers are lazy.
And then as a four-wheeler, what exactly happens in the weigh station?
They'll weigh your truck and make sure that like you're, you know, within the limit, the capacity limits of your vehicle. They'll often pull you around back for an inspection and check your paperwork and inspect your truck and, like, you know, just make sure everything's safe. You know, I don't disagree with that sort of thing. It's just it gets political with who they do inspect more and who they don't.
One of the things that I've shared with the listener is I am a constant opponent to the existence of tolls. Those highways were built in the 1950s, early 1960s. They were paid off long ago. And I've read the toll rules. I've read the legislation for most of those highways as to why they have tolls and when will they come down. And it's incredible. But what most people don't realize is that when I drive from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, that's going to be $60. When an 18-wheeler drives from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, that's $1,000.
Yeah, and it's not like the money is being used exclusively for the maintenance of the road or for making anything better for the motorist. You get this too with fuel excise taxes. That's supposed to go back into federal highway funds, and a lot of that gets sponged off for other things unrelated to transportation.
Yes, and I agree with you. You're absolutely right. The gasoline taxes goes to repair the roads. Almost none of the money from tolls goes to repair the roads. Most of it goes to bonds. But my favorite line item, Gord, I think you'll appreciate this. My favorite line item, the Pennsylvania Turnpike has a budget for public relations of $25 million a year. I'm like,
oh, good Lord.
I'm like, does every road need a PR firm? What? They have $25 million a year for public relations? I have said, and maybe you'll agree, that any mayor, governor, presidential candidate that says, I will do whatever I can to get rid of the tolls on the highway in my area, they'd win instantly. They wouldn't have to say another thing. It's the universal hate.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, and as I mentioned before, a lot of truckers don't like Interstate 70 in Indiana because it's so beat up, and they're proposing to make that a toll road. Well, do we have any guarantee that they're actually going to upgrade the road at all? How come they're not using the fuel taxes and everything else that the state of Indiana and the federal DOT already have at their disposal to fix that road? We have no guarantee that the tolls will do anything to fix it. I agree with you.
What can four-wheelers do to make life of 18-wheelers a little easier?
Don't cut us off. Don't hang out in our blind spots and use your cruise control, goddammit.
Really? The cruise control? Why do you love that?
Because truckers use cruise control to maintain sanity and good fuel efficiency, and then we don't have to pass people. If everybody just sets a cruise control and sticks with it, we can all get along easier on the road.
We have to buy your book. Share with us the title again.
My book's called End of the Road, Inside the War on Truckers. My publisher is called Creed and Culture. You can get it there, creedandculture.com. Otherwise, you can order it on Amazon. It's also available as an audio book narrated by the dulcet and velvety tones you're hearing right now.
Well, that'll sell it right away. I appreciate your time today, Gord, a great Canadian on Another Side of Midnight.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network.
You see, I push the button exactly right, and then it does nothing. I push the button to hear the jingle, the nice jingle, and then it did
Another
nothing.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network.
And then I have to go on record as explaining that I believe in Macs, Apple Macs. They start right away. Whenever I'm stuck with a PC against my will, and it's always against my will, I suffer because I am left-handed, and lefties, as you know, have special needs, and we're different, and it's a special challenge to be left-handed, and it is contrary to the very gestalt of a PC. But a Mac, I swear, had to have been created by lefties. Had to be. All right, you and I are talking about 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I believe that what Kash Patel was trying to signal us about the Epstein files was that it wasn't just the pedophilia he was not allowed to release. It was not about the pictures that were spooky and scary. It was about something much deeper and much darker and much more terrifying, which was that the elites that came to Mr. Epstein and that were involved with him had a very tragic, horrific proclivity, which is that they drank human blood. This has been discussed, documented for thousands of years, that there are certain human beings that seek out human blood. But what goes deeper in the Epstein files, which is what has not been released and what the delay is, it's not about, ooh, you know, Clinton did this or Trump did this. No. It's much worse. It's that there's a certain group of very rich people, bored, ran out of things to do, got word that they could become fearless and they could look younger and feel younger and be younger if they drank human blood. And it was a specific kind of human blood. It was human blood from children who were terrified. And when a child is terrified, their body creates a certain enzyme, a certain chemical. I forget what it's called, but that's what they wanted. They terrify these kids, extract the blood, and sell it for unbelievable amounts of money. That's what I believe Kash Patel is afraid to reveal, because it's far beyond comprehension, and there isn't punishment enough for the people who would spend the money for that. That's my opinion. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling, Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
This horrific idea that there are hundreds, maybe thousands of elites who consume human blood in order to erase their fears and to look younger. Well, that's not a new idea. This has been in the news for off and on for years, including in Arizona, a human chop shop.
Accused of selling bodies and body parts, a trial set to begin in just months. And tonight, new grisly details of what the FBI says really happened.
ABC 15's Nicole Valdez is live. And Nicole, this paints a Frankenstein-like picture.
Yeah, it really does, Katie and Steve. Closed for years, this building off 24th Street and University doesn't look like much, but according to new claims in these court documents, the Biological Resource Center was essentially running a chop shop for human body parts, mixing, matching, and selling them in ways we never heard of until tonight. Described as unsettling, but it sounds a whole lot worse. One FBI agent revealing what it was really like inside the Phoenix body donation facility. In 2014, he saw everything from buckets of heads, arms, and legs to coolers filled with severed penises when the FBI raided the building.
Confused and angry. We thought this was going to be doing some good.
He even spotted a smaller head sewn onto a larger torso in a, quote, Frankenstein manner.
It wasn't a choice we made. It wasn't a choice any of the families made.
Body parts piled on top of each other inside Biological Resource Center, where families donated their loved ones for medical research.
Discoveries of sickness and disease. Maybe come up with a cure.
Some say the company violated everything they promised.
Tragedy that's never resolved. And it just keeps going on and deeper and deeper.
The limbs, according to that agent, with no apparent identification. The company sued months after the FBI raided families claiming their loved ones weren't treated with dignity and respect, a promise written on their own consent forms. The company also accused of selling body parts for profit after saying they'd only use the parts they needed and would cremate the ones they didn't and return them. A torso with a head apparently went for $2,400. A leg about $1,100. They'd even sell knees and feet alone for under $500.
But the story gets bigger.
Cannibalism might seem kind of gruesome, and kind of is. I'm going to give you a little background of what got me to this position to run this bill. So back in 2019, I heard that Washington State was starting to do human composting, and that disturbed me. I wanted to address this because what I didn't want to see is bags of compost with human bone fragments. I want to stop it getting into the human food supply. I was on a plane this summer, watched a video of some food show, and the three contestants tasted the food and they had to guess what was in it. It was some kind of a sausage. And one of the options they told these people that was in the food was human flesh.
Can you tell us the three secret ingredients that might be found in this amazing sausage that you made for us today?
The three secret ingredients that might be found in the sausage are fish liver, human flesh, or shark.
Are those really the three ingredients?
Yeah, fish liver, human flesh, or shark. And I said, there's a stigma surrounding this.
We're good. Come on, Brian, please.
All right. Thank you, Kiff. Thank you very much. All right, Joe, fish liver, shark,
or human flesh?
God help you, it better be shark.
All right, two, what do you think it's going to be?
Shark two.
Shark?
The liver is like too obvious, and I don't think it's human flesh, so I think a shark.
Chef Keith, can you tell us what is the secret ingredient in this dish?
Yes, I'm afraid you're both wrong. It is human flesh.
No. No.
Whoa.
That's not okay. That's not all right.
You know,
the way our society's going and the direction we're going, this is going to be normalized. There's only one state in the union that it is illegal. Cannibalism is illegal, and that is Idaho.
You know, why can't we eat babies? What's wrong with eating babies? If we've got extra babies around that nobody wants, why can't we eat them, right?
I'm really worried about that line of thinking. I think that's wrong, and I think it's a little dangerous. It sounds almost
imagining those circumstances.
No. So let me clarify, because this is important, right? Yeah. So it has such terrible consequences, both in terms of what we are doing to our captives and what we are doing to our own morality and the message we're sending to the rest of the world about whether we're good guys or bad guys, that I wouldn't do it. I might not do it even if I thought that it was absolutely going to work, when I don't think it is. It's very unlikely. Right. It's that you've got to avoid those beginnings to avoid those endings. They never started little and remained little. It always starts a little bit, and then they're drawing and quartering
you
people.
You're ignoring half of my argument, which is, I'm arguing in most cases, it's not psychopathology.
Sam, that seems like an incredible excuse for it.
No. Sam Harris can't figure out why we can't eat babies, right? It makes me look like an ass.
So we agree there. Okay. Now, the slight caveat to that, or a very important caveat to that, is that, hey, isn't this a better way of life? I got 72 girls in Vegas that are better, right? So you
seem to think I'm much more hawkish than I am. You and I might check the same boxes. And the moment you accept, and again, many people don't accept this for reasons I cannot fathom, but the moment you accept that certain people really do eat babies, death today would not be a bad thing for them. Why can't we eat babies? You know, give me an ethical argument about why this is really, really wrong. Because just think about this. You know, if I thought that my neighbor was torturing children in his basement, right? And then how are prisoners going to behave who just have all these animosities?
Sam, clearly the right idea isn't to kill all of them.
No, but I think you could. It's possible.
It's possible that there's a sector of our culture, of our society, here or around the world, that consumes human flesh, that consumes human blood. And they do it both for ritualistic reasons, satanic reasons, but also because they believe they have such an extraordinary wealth and vanity that they believe by consuming human blood, it will keep them fearless and young. And there's reason to believe that that is part of what the Jeffrey Epstein business was. Because no matter how precious and valuable, hundreds of millions of dollars is not going to go toward men having sex. There's a point at which a guy's going to go, really? Because I don't think it's worth that much. There has been something else. There has to have been something else at play to have a man like Leon Black apparently over the years invest almost half a billion dollars with Jeffrey Epstein's business. Why haven't we seen any documentaries, any revelations, any reporting about what was Jeffrey Epstein's childhood about? Where was he born? Where was he raised? Or was he a complete fabrication of Mossad or a group of very rich people who said, listen, we'd like you to be in charge of all of our fun. Here, we're going to give you hundreds of millions of dollars, Jeffrey, and we'd like you to be in charge of our fun. We want to be able to call you up from time to time and say, we'd like to have this. Just the way when you go to a nice resort and you call the concierge and say, I'd like to have miniature golf today. And I'd like to have a competitive course. And then could you get us a reservation at the really fancy restaurant on the island? Okay, that's your experience. Imagine if Jeffrey Epstein is a concierge for the uber rich, concierge for people who have so much money, they have no idea what to do. And they give him little hints. It'd be good to have this or that. And he arranges it. He arranges it. Here's a man who didn't graduate from college. Here's a man who had no appreciable skills. In the interviews I've seen with Jeffrey Epstein, he's a good talker. But when you're talking about $500 million that some of these guys gave him, it's not to arrange dates. It's not to get seats at a good restaurant. It's something much, much more. And they didn't need him to launder their money. They sure as hell didn't need him to do his taxes, to do their taxes. They didn't need him for that. They needed him for something extraordinary. And the reason it is so wrapped up in secrecy is it was beyond evil. And when it's beyond evil, you got to remember the legend of Dracula. The legend of Dracula is this. Dracula can come to your door, but Dracula cannot let himself in. Dracula has to be invited in. And whatever evil was taking place there, these rich guys invited it in. And then they had a big problem, a multiple big problem. I'm not even saying that any of them knew what was going on, but they got the result that they wanted. Whatever the result was, they were getting that result. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. It is a mystery. The reason that you and I go back to thinking about Jeffrey Epstein, and the reason we go back to thinking about Savannah Guthrie's mom's disappearance, is because we're logical, we have common sense, we're smart, and something's missing. When our brains can't settle on a story, a mystery, when our brains can't settle, it's because something isn't true. We're missing a fact, we're missing a piece of information, or we're living in a lie. There's a lie circling and circling. Our brains immediately settle down when it has all the information. When we have all the information, our brains calm down, make sense, we never think about it again. For the tragedy of Robert Kennedy being murdered, we don't enter the rabbit hole of who did it, why did they do it? No, we're convinced that that's what happened. Not a problem. When Brother John was murdered, we still don't believe what we've been told. There's still stuff missing. It still doesn't settle down because either we've been lied to or we don't have all the facts or nobody has all the facts because that's why it can't settle down. If you're having trouble getting to sleep on any given night, it's simple to get to sleep. If you can't get to sleep, it's because there's a lie. And the lie is either that you can predict the future or rewrite the past. One of those are at work. And of course, those aren't true. Those are lies. If you think about what you know to be true, today is Sunday, today is Sunday, today is Sunday, you'll go right to sleep. Your mommy loves you. You're loved. You like your work. You hate your work. Your car is the color purple, whatever the truth is, you will calm down. Your brain will calm down. You go right to sleep. Guaranteed. I have a phone number. It's 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. That, I believe, is the essence for you and me of the Jeffrey Epstein story. We keep thinking we don't have all the information. That's why we can't calm down on the story. And that's true. We don't have all the information. We don't have the truth. We're not living in the truth of that. We're living in 10 different pieces that don't click together. And therefore, we will go toward wild assumptions or the assumptions of whatever devil we want. Whoever we hate, whatever story we hate, whatever company we hate, whatever it is that involves hate, dislike, don't want it to be true, want it to be this, we will make it fill in the blanks. And then we'll sit there and go, that's not it. That isn't the truth. It's a mystery. Same thing with the Kennedy assassination. Same thing with the UFOs. Whenever we keep going back to it and it doesn't calm down, it's because we believe we're being lied to or we just don't have been given all the information. And at the same time, with the not being given all the information, we assume evil. We assume we've been denied all the information. We're not being given all the information because we're being denied. Sometimes we're not given all the information because the people who have the information don't think they do. They're not sharing more information with us because they don't have any. They don't know what to do. And rather than being honest and saying, we don't know, we just don't have all the information. They're too proud and they want to maintain power and they want to put on a face of, yes, we know about all this. It's being handled. Don't worry about it. We'll like when the drones last November, the drones over Jersey, for weeks. And then finally, when Trump became president, he goes, oh, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. There's nothing there. Yes, there have been hundreds of drones over North Jersey, but pay no attention. The military knows what they are. Okay, could we know what they are? They're drones. Yeah. Could you tell us what they're for? Nothing to worry about. Let's move on. Then we get suspicious, and then our brains can't settle down. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. But I want you to think about when Kash Patel was asked about the Epstein files. Think about that. He got nervous. He started putting many pieces of Post-it notes on the desk in front of him. He kept moving them around like pieces of a lie. He kept moving them around. And I believe he kept moving them around and he kept being nervous because he was very nervous about what he did know. And he knew it was so horrific. He kept saying, it's kiddie porn. I can't release it. I couldn't release it under any circumstances, which is true. But it was more than that. There was another fear that was coming out of him. I'm sorry, this is nothing I'm going to release. What? It's kiddie porn? But he didn't say it matter-of-factly. He didn't say it in a way that we believed. And therefore, I believe there was something else going on. And I believe what he may have bumped into was the worst, the most craven behavior humanly possible, which is cannibalism. And then you throw in the fact that it was really rich people, well-educated people who had run out of things to do and had been told, no, don't go to Sephora for youth creams. We've got human blood, and that human blood will keep you young, and that human blood will keep you fearless, and it will cost you $1 million a vial. What? Why will it cost me $1 million a vial? Because it comes from live babies. It comes from live toddlers. And I think that's what he ran into, in my opinion. I think that's what he ran into. He ran into the most craven elements of human beings, the most craven behavior of humans. And that's what he found. And there's no way he can release that, can he? Can he? He can't release that until it gets released with the news that all the people involved have been arrested. And all the people involved are going to court the next day to be tried and put to death. That's how he's got to release it. He can't release anything about human cannibalism until he announces at the same time, and they're going to court today. He could not let it hang out there. Gee, we're going to bring him to court? I don't know. Mike, Walter M. Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network, Another Side of Midnight. Mike, welcome to 800-848-9222. Hi.
Yes, good morning, Walter.
Sir.
Glad you took my call. I'm just curious, you mentioned the word mystery. Now, I know you have that cat at home, the male cat. You had a problem with it. But 2-3 weeks ago, you were talking on the radio about them, and I suggested the wee-wee pads on the corner of the walls. Did you solve that problem at all? Or?
I bought the pads. I have not deployed them.
Oh.
I also took your suggestion, which was that the cat will not go in the litter box if it doesn't like the litter. And therefore, I bought new litter. The result of that is I have to buy yet more new litter. That didn't work. But I'm going to keep trying until we get to a litter that the cat wants to use. There is the wee-wee pad we will do. That's going to annoy my wife even more than the cat. But I think that's what we're going to have to do. It is a mystery. And every article I've ever read about and every call I got about the cats and what do you do with a male cat who pees everywhere all the time, every answer is different. Every answer is conflicting. And there is ultimately no solution until you get lucky. It's very much like a slot machine, the cat pee slot machine. Thank you very much for calling, Mike, at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. That's what's going to happen. You know who's going to be here very soon is Jake Novak. Jake Novak, a prestigious news person from a prominent intellectual family that we shared a very special experience tonight, Jake and I. We shared a remarkable experience, but he got the payoff. We were at this banquet, this dinner, the Inner Circle Club in New York City, which consists of the news people in the media in New York City. And every year for over 100 years, they have this show where they make fun of, in a good-natured way, of the mayor of New York. And tonight, it's three acts. And I got to see the first two acts, but then I had to come here and I had to be with you. Now, the last act is when the mayor, Mondami, reacts to the play that he has suffered through and the kidding and the ribbing he's suffered through. Now you, Jake Novak, got to see the mayor respond. Now, how was the mayor? Was the mayor funny?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was very well produced. He and his staff, and I assume some people who helped the staff, put together a video, put together skits of their own. Remember, Mamdani's mother is a longtime Bollywood and now also Hollywood movie producer. So I don't know if that means there's a genetic passing on of any kind of theatrical talent, but he certainly has access to people who can help him with that. They made fun of his smile as being more than just charming, but also gets really creepy. They literally, yeah, so you were talking about how he's self-deprecating. That entire sketch, it was on. They did that on video. They did it like it was a horror movie trailer. So that was pretty well done. No, I mean, I think he likes to perform. And this, I think this is an event where some mayors have really gotten into it full bore and others have just made the appearance. You know, Mike Bloomberg showed up and smiled for a second and left. I don't think de Blasio did such a great job with it. Even Eric Adams, who was supposedly Mr. Nightlife. But this is the kind of event where he stayed the whole time. Well, I mean, he was there for the entire event. It's a long dinner. It's a long dinner. So I think this is what he likes the most.
Well, considering that this is for the mayor, are you telling me that other mayors in the past left early?
They didn't. They would come late. They would come maybe for the show. You know, Rudy Giuliani made this dinner, which never really got too much attention. He made it really famous in the late 90s when he did a sketch in drag.
Ah.
And one of the people who did the sketch with him was Donald Trump. This was the late 90s. Suddenly, people started talking about this dinner again. For those of you who don't, the Inner Circle is like the White House Correspondents' Dinner for the New York press. So it's a black tie event, as you've been talking about. Everyone tries to get their picture taken there. Although, unlike the White House Correspondents' Dinner, it doesn't celebrities who are not connected to the news media aren't aren't there. It doesn't like you have a bunch of, because the White House correspondents that are all these Hollywood celebrities show up. I don't understand that, but whatever.
So when Mondami responded, and a lot of it was pre-produced, a lot of it was video that mom made, mom's friends made. I'm pretty sure that would be it. Did he get up and speak at all, extemporaneously at all?
He starts, and you know, there was a teleprompter at the back of the ballroom, not only for the mayor, but for the performers to remember all their lines. They don't have a long time to do their rehearsing. There was an extremely professional orchestra there. I mean,
that was a good orchestra.
It was a really good orchestra, dealing with very, very, very amateur performers there who, of course, are not performers professionally. There were one or two who clearly had some serious lessons in dancing and things like that. But the rest of it was, you know, some of it was funny. Some of it wasn't. You know, listen, this isn't their day job, so I'm not going to be mean about it. They took a lot of guts to get up there. But there was a massive teleprompter at the back of the ballroom for them. And I noticed the mayor was using it as well. And he did have a good monologue. But you know what was interesting? They really, because, you know, some of these White House correspondence centers, there have been some famous incidents where the comedians went too far. Don Imus was one example, or at least he was accused of that. Then there was another comedian who really went nuts on Trump administration officials during that first year and went after Sarah Huckabee Sanders in an over-the-top way. There wasn't really anything near over the top.
I thought it was really mild. In fact, yeah. I thought it was good natured ribbing, and therefore probably part of the reason he hung around. He wasn't scared. Now, Jake Novak, while we were at dinner, you mentioned getting ready for your top five at five. There's a huge story that took place today. And let's talk a little bit about that. This was remarkable.
Yeah, there wasn't this is not being reported widely yet. This could be because of just general bias, or it could be because they're waiting for the kind of confirmations that will take another day. But my own sources and the sources that haven't steered me wrong yet in this war tell me that what's left of that regime that was running Iran for the last few weeks since the Ayatollah died, was killed. They're all gone tonight. They got wiped out tonight. The head of the IRGC, the speaker of the parliament, those two were the two big leaders of the country since the war started, because the Ayatollah Khamenei died on the first day. Those were the two guys running things. They were using the son of the Ayatollah, Mutaba Khamenei, as kind of a figurehead, and that's why so many people think he's either dead or close to it. But that's not where it ends, Walter. They also got the head of the police, who's also the head of the Iran's budget and finance, also an Iranian Air Force general, the one who specifically and personally threatened to assassinate President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. Now he's dead. And the head of their nuclear research program. I mean, this was a major takeout, and I was expecting this because in the hours leading up to the evening, we were seeing videos of very large explosions in places where people were identifying as being IRGC strongholds. So I was expecting to see some names like this, but it looks like they really ran the table here, big time.
Now it's not an immediate threat. Now it's no longer an immediate threat. All the scary people have been taken out. All right, this is Jake Novak. More with Jake and the top five at five in just seconds. Walter M. Sterling. Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, Walter Sterling with Jake Novak. Jake Novak, who in just moments will share with us the top five at five. We were talking about this award dinner we were at, not an award dinner, a celebration of the democracy dinner, the inner circle of New York City press. I was most impressed that this was over 100 years old. Like, whoa. And they work mostly in local TV, some from radio, some from print. and they get together once a year to make lighthearted fun of the mayor of the city of New York, which is usually a fairly easy task. And it was interesting this year. Here was like a textbook case of somebody you can make fun of, the mayor of New York, but they were kind to him in general. And I think that's because it was a transitional period. We don't really know him. We know him from his campaign, which was wacky. And they actually made tougher, that's what it was. They made tougher fun of his opponents, the people who ran against him. They made a lot of fun of Cuomo in a much stronger way than they made fun of him. And they made fun of Curtis Sliwa, who was there.
He was there. And
thought it was fun. Was Cuomo there, I wonder?
No, he wasn't there. And Sliwa, this is the part that you missed. Sliwa appeared in one of those pre-produced videos with the mayor, pretending to be somebody else. And you know, I mean, this is all, you know, again, you please, I mean, please don't take me as too harsh a critic. These are full-time journalists who were pretending to be singers and dancers and comedians last night, and they did a fine job considering that they are not professionals. But some of the stuff just didn't land because, you know, but that's the whole thing. I think everyone kind of realizes if we had, if people had been expecting A-list performers, they would maybe be upset, but that wasn't the case. And it's really good natured, and it's just a chance to see people that you may have not seen in a long time. I saw people last night I hadn't seen in 30 years, almost 30 years.
Yeah, well, we saw some people there who we hadn't seen in 30 years because they retired.
Yeah.
This seems to be their only activity is preparing for the Inner Circle Award. Now, I have a question for you. You've done this great show from 5 to 6 a.m. Saturday and Sunday for a couple weeks now. On the line with hard-hitting, local, important news. And now that you're doing it every week, and you start to, you've mentioned this before, you start to compare the stories that you're pulling out and that you're reporting on and you're covering, which all make sense to me. How does that compare with other news sources? Are you surprised that there are so many stories that aren't being covered by them, or are you sort of in sync? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, but it doesn't make me any less angry. As much as I love being the one person who's going to give you the big, I mean, the big story from the war in Iran that everyone should be knowing right now is what I just talked to you about. These major, major leaders, one after the other, they were all taken out in the last 16 to 12 hours or so. What everyone else is going to be leading with as far as the war in Iran with, and sometimes some of them will lead with this period, is this one story in the Washington Post, which claims that we're about to bring a lot of ground troops in Iran. Now, that may be true. But it's only one newspaper reporting this. It's not really giving you the details about what that might be. It could very simply be a handful of troops going in. It's not there's really not a lot of specifics there. But this is going to be everybody's lead, including some of the right wing news organizations. I see the New York Post is leading with that. That's not your lead. I'm sorry. You know, there's a news director in me that's dying to get out. And I'm sorry. This is not what's going to get you the clicks. You show. The fear factor of a ground invasion, which people have already been talking about for a few days now. It's kind of an old story. What's new is in this last half day, you've had all these major leaders taken out. There was a major intel change in our fortunes. And not that we didn't know where the other regime guys were, but since the original ones were taken out, it was a little harder to find them. Clearly, a bunch of people dropped dimes on these people in the last day or so. That's your big story right now. You don't have to say this is, you don't have to applaud it. You don't just say, oh, this means America's great or Trump is great. But that's clearly the more dramatic story. Why don't these people understand what's more interesting? We've been trying to scare the public. They've been trying to scare the public with a full-on ground invasion narrative for several days now. That's old. A story that, oh, the Washington Post has maybe one more detail about it. That's not your lead. That's not your lead any day of the week. I don't understand why these people don't seem to care anymore about being more dramatic. Again, responsibly so. I'm not saying make up stuff. But this is a much more dramatic story, and you lead with the more dramatic story. Why is it so hard for them to understand? That bothers me, Walter.
At the third or fourth paragraph in the ground troop story, the actual story comes out, which is Pete Hegseth saying, no, Trump hasn't said we're going to do it. Trump hasn't said we should do it. Trump hasn't given me a date to do it. I'm just the Secretary of War, and it's my job to be prepared with anything the president might want. My job is to make sure he has all the options available to him. But under no circumstances has he speculated on this with me. It's my job to be ready for him. And I'm like, okay, so that's not a story at all.
Yeah, it isn't. It really isn't. And one of the things, I mean, what could be an interesting sidebar story, not a lead, is to talk about how this might be some newer version of what happened in 1991 during the first Gulf War. Both the United States and the British, their most elite commandos, were told very early on, even before the war started, that they needed to get these Scud missile launchers. They didn't have the kind of technology that we've had, like we have now. And there's a great book about this by a guy named Andy McNab, who was British SAS. So he's coming from the British point of view. But he was dropped into Iraq near the Syrian border to try to go get, and he got captured. His interesting book. He survived, obviously. So I can see an interesting sidebar story saying, are there small commando units that are being trained to go after those few remaining underground missile launchers that have been immune so far, because they are underground and they're really hard to get? Maybe they need someone to at least light the target for them, maybe not necessarily destroy them. That would be an interesting story that I would get a lot of military experts and interview them. I talked to Andy McNab about it, that would be a good story. So they're, it's not like they're not on the cusp of a potentially good story, but it's not your lead. It's not your lead. The lead would be on that story as if the orders come down and here's where, and you're going to do it any day now. But that's not, as you said, they bury it into the third paragraph to tell you it may not happen, by the way. And it may not even be close to happening. Again, not a lead. Not a lead. Not your top story.
Jake Novak, coming up in just seconds, has the top five news stories at 5 o'clock. Hardcore, serious news person, presenting stories you're just not going to get anyplace else. I'm Walter Sterling. The greatest gift you and I can receive is a request for help. Red Apple Audio Networks, Another Side of Midnight.
President Barack Obama.
Virginia, we are counting on you. Republicans want to steal enough seats in Congress to rig the next election and wield unchecked power for 2 more years. But you can stop them by voting yes by April 21st. Help put our elections back on a level playing field and let voters decide, not politicians. Vote yes by April 21st.
Paid for by Virginians for Fair Elections.